Take your Bibles, if you would, tonight to Ruth chapter 3. I'm going to tell you before I start tonight, as I was studying this for the last couple weeks, I thought about a lady that I hadn't thought about in probably a couple years. It was in 1970, the fall of 1970, actually the summer of 1970, and I was going to GMI. It was before I was married. And the Central Baptist Church asked me to come for the summer and be their interim pastor. Their pastor had resigned in May, and they had called a new pastor, and he wouldn't come until September. And so they asked me to come and preach Sunday morning and Sunday night throughout the summer. And I met a lady over there named Marjorie Wright, and she took a liking to me. And she became what I referred to lovingly as my Jewish mother. You know, there's a stereotype that goes along with a Jewish mother, somebody that, you know, really cares for her children and is not afraid to get involved in their lives and give them all sorts of advice. Some of you may have had a mother like that. In fact, I did her funeral about 10 years later, and I told the folks that were at the funeral that she was my Jewish mother. Debbie and I were engaged, but not married yet, and she was trying to fix me up. I said, Marjorie, I'm engaged. I don't need to be fixed up. She said, well, you never know what God may change your mind before you get married. I said, well, and I had to watch it because she'd set it up for people to invite me over for lunch on Sunday, and there'd always be a single young lady there. And I finally got smart enough to ask before I accepted the dinner invitation, well, who's going to be there before I accepted it or not? And I tell you all that to tell you that I couldn't help but think about her as we study the third chapter of Ruth, because we see a Jewish mother at work in Ruth chapter 3 in the person of Naomi. And I just, as I studied, I just had to smile and chuckle a little bit as we see Naomi working behind the scenes to arrange this marriage between Ruth and Boaz. So let me review real quickly. Time of the judges, famine in the land. A man from Bethlehem, Judah, named Elimelech, decides, because of the famine, to move to Moab. He takes his wife, Naomi. He takes his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. He dies. And Naomi, instead of coming back to Bethlehem at that point, decides to stay in the land of Moab, and her two sons marry two Moab girls. Mahlon marries Ruth. Chilion marries Orpah. The boys die. Naomi hears the famine's over, so she decides to go back to Bethlehem. Her daughter-in-laws, both of them, at first say, well, we'll go back with you. And Naomi says, why? I have no more sons. You need to go back home and find a husband. Orpah decides to go back. Ruth says, nope, I'm going with you. Your people are going to be my people. Your God's going to be my God. So they come back to Bethlehem. As they come back, people begin to recognize her, and she said, don't call me Naomi anymore, whose name means pleasant. Call me Mara, who means bitter, because she says the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. When they get back, they need to make a living. And so the way that widows made a living back in that day was to go into the fields to glean. And so Ruth went into the fields after the harvesters, after the reapers. It was barley harvest and then wheat harvest after that. But she went into field, and God directed her to the field of Boaz. When Boaz came out to the field as the landowner, he noticed this young maiden that was gleaning in his field. And so he asked, well, who is this? And his foreman said, well, this is a Moabite girl that came back with Naomi. She's a hard worker. She hasn't taken many breaks. She's been here since early morning. And she asked if she could glean. And since I knew that Naomi or Elimelech was a relative of yours, I said yes. And Boaz had heard about Ruth. He'd heard about how she'd left her homeland, her family, her God, had come to be with Naomi and help take care of Naomi and put her trust in the God of Israel. And so he showed kindness to her. He said, when you get thirsty, go drink out of the vessel that's been drawn for the reapers. At lunchtime, he actually ate with her and made sure that she had all she wanted to eat. He instructed the reapers, let her not only glean, but let her join in the harvest. Let her be beside you and pick the sheaves before anybody else does. And if she gets behind you, then let some extra handfuls on purpose fall for her. And she ended up the day with five times what normal gleaners glean because of Boaz's kindness. And he told her, he said, now, don't, you know, you just stay near my reapers. I've told the young men not to touch you, not to harm you, and you just stay with them until the harvest is over. And she goes home and tells Naomi, and Naomi says, you need to do exactly what he said. The last verse in chapter 2 says that the barley harvest and the wheat harvest was over. And so we come to chapter 3 tonight. In verse 1 it says, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? Now that word rest means, shouldn't I seek a husband for you? Shouldn't I seek a marriage for you? Because if you were married, you would not have to glean anymore. Your husband would take care of you. Your husband would be responsible, you know, for what you need. And so she was assuming the role of Ruth's mother. Again, Ruth's mother was, if she was still alive, was back in Moab and couldn't, you know, take care of this. Back in this day, most marriages were arranged by parents. And so Naomi was taking on the role that Ruth's mother would take if Ruth was at home to arrange a marriage. And she already had somebody in mind. She says in verse 2, and now is not Boaz of our kindred with whose maidens thou wast. Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Now, again, Ruth had gleaned in Boaz's field behind his reapers. He showed kindness to her, and I think Naomi may have sensed that maybe there was something more to just his kindness. And I think she had detected that Ruth had some feelings for him as well. And she reminded Ruth, now he's one of our kindred. He's one of our close relatives. Now, Boaz was probably older than Ruth. When we get down to verse 10, he's going to compliment her for not chasing after younger men, which implies that he was a little bit older than her. But as a kinsman, he had responsibility. We've talked about the Hebrew goel and the responsibility they had toward their family. They were, again, to redeem land or property that had been sold because of poverty, so that it would stay in their family. If they didn't redeem it, it would come back to the family in the year of the Jubilee. But if they could redeem it quicker than that, they were responsible for doing that. They were responsible for avenging a murder in their family. In other words, for taking vengeance. And then, as it applies to this story, they were responsible if one of their relatives died and left no children, they were responsible for marrying the widow and raising up a child to carry on that family name. So Boaz was a kinsman of Elimelech, probably a nephew. In a minute we're going to talk about that there was a nearer kinsman, perhaps one of Elimelech's brothers. We're not sure, but there was a nearer kinsman. And that's going to come into play at the end of the chapter. We'll see in just a minute. But I would remind you that as a widow, Naomi also had a claim. She had no children to carry on Elimelech's name. And so we see that as she moves to arrange this marriage between Ruth and Boaz, she's sort of giving up her claim to have one of his relatives marry her and raise up a child to carry on Elimelech's family. So she tells Ruth. Now, and again, I'm going to put this in my own words. I think this is a conversation that happened. He said, Ruth, Boaz would make a good husband for you. He's a kinsman, and I've heard that he's winnowing barley tonight in the threshing floor. Now, threshing floor, they usually set up a spot that was in the middle of the field. And again, these fields were owned by different people, and each one had a different section. But they set up a spot that was central to the harvest field. And the process of winnowing was taking the grain and throwing it up in the air and letting the wind blow the shaft away. And so this was, you know, I'm sure Boaz had some men doing that, but it was the custom for the owner of the land to be there to make sure that they were doing it right. And oftentimes they would take part in the process of throwing it up and letting the wind blow the shaft away and then collecting the grain that was left. And it was a process that was exhausting. It was a process that you got tired from doing it. And so she said to Ruth, I've heard that he's going to be winnowing barley tonight in the threshing floor. So she says in verse 3, now I want you to notice the advice that she gives her daughter-in-law. It would be advice that any mother would give their daughter if she was trying to fix her up with a husband. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And so here's what she said. Take a bath. Put on some sweet-smelling stuff, and put on your best outfit, your most attractive outfit, and go down to where he is, but don't make yourself known. Don't let him know that you're there until he gets done with the work, until he gets done, because he's going to be tired. He'll be more susceptible to your charms then. And wait till he gets done eating, and wait till he gets done drinking. Wait until he gets done with all of that stuff. And verse 4, and it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Now, so she says, when he lays down, go to where he is, take his robe off of his feet, lay down at his feet, cover yourself with his robe, and when he notices you, he'll tell you what to do. Now, here's what Naomi was telling Ruth to do. And it was a common practice. Okay, I mean, this is the way that it was done sometimes back in this day. When Ruth took Boaz's robe and covered herself, and she's going to say it, we're going to see that she actually says, take your garment and cover me, or take your robe and cover me. What she was doing was proposing to Boaz. She was basically asking him, when she was going to say, spread thy skirt over thy handmaid, she was asking to be taken into his family as his wife and to be provided for and protected as his wife. And so I would tell you, the Bible is not against women proposing to men. There's not many examples in the Bible where that happened. Again, because back in this day, marriages were usually arranged by the parents. But here was an example where a young lady took the initiative and asked a man to marry her. So in verse 5, and she said unto her, Ruth said to Naomi, all that thou sayest unto me, I'll do it. I mean, I'll do exactly what you tell me to do. In verse 6, and she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. So in other words, she took a bath, she put on perfume, she put on her best outfit. She went down to where Boaz was, marked a spot where he was. Verse 7, and when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight. Now, again, I don't know what time Boaz, you know, finished winnowing and went to bed, but it was probably at dark, so he could have been, he was tired because of what he'd been done, and so he'd lay down, and he had been asleep for a little while at least, that the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. Now, I always like to try to put myself in the place of these Bible characters when we read these stories. So just imagine, you've worked all day, you're tired, you've eaten, you've drunk, and you've gone to sleep, and about midnight, let's say you've been asleep for 4 or 5 hours, and again, you're bone tired, and about midnight you wake up and there's something laying at your feet, and it's not the dog. It's a person. It's a woman. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd be afraid too. I'd be startled. I think he was. He was startled. He didn't know what was going on. And so he says, in verse 9, he asked a question that we would ask And he said, "Who art thou? Who is this laying at my feet?" And she said, "I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thy handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." So he wakes up in the middle of the night, discovers this girl laying at his feet with his robe covering her. And when he wakes up, afraid and startled, she says, "Marry me. And it's your responsibility to, because you're a near kinsman." Now, in similar circumstances, we might have said, "What? Huh?" I mean, just think about it. Put yourself in his place. You're a bachelor. I don't think it doesn't say anything about Boaz being married before. You're a bachelor. You're up in years a little bit. I don't know, that could be 40, but you've never married. This is a young lady. She may have been in her 20s. And she wakes you up in the middle of the night, or you wake up in the middle of the night. She's laying at your feet, and the first thing she says, "I want you to marry me. And by the way, it's your responsibility because you're a near kinsman." Now, we might have said, hang on a minute. Let's think about this. Just a minute. But here's what Boaz says. Verse 10, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the later end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich." Again, implies that Ruth was younger than Boaz. And so he blessed her and says, you haven't gone after young men. You've come after me. Verse 11, "And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman." And so here's what Boaz says. "Yes, I will marry you." And he says, "Here's the reason why. I know you're a virtuous woman." Ruth had lived her life up until that point pure. She had lived her life up to that point in a way that was pleasing to God and to man. And so when Boaz was put in this situation, I mean, he knew her. He'd heard about what she'd done to Naomi, and he'd watched as she'd work to support herself and her mother-in-law. And when faced with this proposal, he says, "I will do it. I will marry you." Doesn't look like he had to think about it much. He just said, "Yes." But here's where some suspense comes into the story. Verse 12, "And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman, howbeit there is a kinsman nearer than I." There's somebody closer to Elimelech than I am. He says, "Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then I will do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning." And so he says, "Okay, Ruth, I'll do it, but there's a little hiccup in this deal. There's somebody closer to Elimelech than I am. I'll talk to him. If he will do the part of the Goel, if he will marry you and raise up a child, that's good. That's the way it should be. But if he won't, then I will." And he says, "Just stay here the rest of the night." Now, you might wonder, why did he tell her to stay there the rest of the night? I think it was just a practical thing. He didn't want to send her out by herself at night to go back into the city. Usually in the middle of the night, only the women of ill report were out in the middle of the night. He didn't want to walk her back because that might raise other questions about her virtue and his virtue. And there were probably other people there as well in the threshing floor. So he said, "Just stay here tonight, and I'll talk to this other kinsman in the morning." So verse 14, "And she lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another." That's a way of saying before they had their coffee, before they could know one another. They got up early before anybody else did. And he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor. Also," he said, "bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. And I can just see Ruth coming in. And Naomi says, "Okay, I want to hear everything. I don't want you to leave anything out. I want you to give it to me blow by blow. I want to know exactly what happened. I want to know exactly what you did. I want to know exactly what you said. I want to know exactly what he said." And so Ruth did. went through blow by blow, told Naomi everything that happened, and she said, "These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, 'Go not empty into thy mother-in-law.'" Boaz knew what Naomi was up to, and so because he wanted to please her as his maybe future mother-in-law, he says, "I want you to take this gift, 6 measures of barley, back to Naomi." Then said Naomi to Ruth, "Set still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day." I imagine at this point Ruth was pretty excited. Here's a young widow that apparently had gotten over her mourning for her husband, was ready to remarry. And she was going to get married, but she did not know to who. I think if she could pick, she would pick Boaz. She knew him, I think had developed some feelings for him as they were in the field together, as he was watching and she was reaping. But there's this other guy in the equation. And I think, you know, again, I'm trying to put myself in her place, that she was a little bit worried. She was probably pacing. Who's it going to be? Which one's it going to be? What's going to happen when Boaz talks to this guy? Is he going to do the part of a kinsman, or is Boaz going to get to marry me? And I think Naomi finally had to say to her, "Ruth, just calm down. You can't do anything about it. You can't worry about it. It's not going to make any difference. Just sit still, because Boaz is going to take care of this thing today. You'll know before the end of the day who you're going to marry." And next week when we talk about chapter 4, you'll see. I mean, Boaz went right back to the city, and he got right after it. I mean, he found the guy, and I won't go into what happens. Some of you know the story. Most of you know the story, but and you know how it comes out. But I couldn't help but chuckle about this Jewish mother-in-law in this case saying, "I need to fix up my daughter-in-law. I need to find her another husband. I need to get her married so that she will have a husband to take care of her." And, of course, we know how it comes out. The Lord blessed and brought Ruth and Boaz together. But thank you for being here tonight. Let's stand, and we'll have a word of prayer and be dismissed.